Not.
Veto.
Circuses on the air.
When the president does it.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen. Shot
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Jonathan's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved for Chicago.
It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And live from the Skyline Studios is my pal from the WGN Newsroom, Dave Schwann. Dave,
hey, Dave.
Good evening, buddy. How are you?
Okay, getting through winter.
Excellent, excellent. And here we're going to start off our history segment with 1813. The pineapple was first introduced to Hawaii, which introduced it to the U.S.
Which introduced it to the world.
That's right, that's
right. Where did it come from?
It was found in Paraguay in the southern part of Brazil. Natives spread the fruit throughout South America and Central America and into the Caribbean region, including the West Indies, where Christopher Columbus first found them.
Isn't that something?
So that was...
The assumption would be, you know...
Pineapples in Hawaii?
Pineapples in Hawaii,
yeah.
Tropics. It's a tropical type of fruit.
Yeah.
That it would just come from there.
Absolutely.
Indigenous to it. Native to it.
Somebody brought it over.
Brought it over.
1889, Columbia Phonograph was formed in Washington, D.C. I have a very early... I think it's turn of the century, like late 1800s, cylinder player.
No, you do.
No, you've seen it. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. With some cylinders, and you think about this, and they say Columbia Records, they look like a, if you don't know what
I
they look
two.
Like.
I'm going to bring them over sometime.
They're like a they're a piece of toilet. They look like a toilet
it
paper
looks like a
roll.
Toilet paper roll.
Yeah.
The cardboard.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And it's a little creepy to listen to it and actually hear it play, but it's pretty darn cool.
Oh, I am absolutely fascinated by the sound of those. The History Channel website some time ago had a collection of sound that was done in the 1890s. And you're thinking to yourself, this is the 19th
yeah.
century
yeah.
you're listening to.
We should get somebody on the show and talk to them, interview them.
Yeah, from 1890.
From 1890, yeah, exactly. 1915, the neon tube was patented by George Claude. 1924, the first Olympic Games to ever opened in France. 1929, and I love this story, the first outdoor feature-length talking motion picture was made. It was a film called In Old Arizona. So they showed it outdoors.
They showed it outdoors. They oh, you're a drive-in movie theater fan.
I am a big drive-in. And, you know, there's only one left, and that's the McHenry here in Chicagoland.
The
I mean,
Chicago
there's some
area.
In downstate Illinois and
yes,
so
there
forth,
are.
Too. But
yeah.
we go once or twice a year, and it is just a throwback. And it's so much fun. And it's in stereo, and you can see it, and it's fun. And the concession stands, which I'm now thinking about, is it's the dead of winter, and we got to think about summer a little bit here.
Right.
But it's just so throwback to me. I love it.
Since we're talking about this very quickly, you must go to Carthage, Missouri, to the Route 66.
Oh, I knew you were going to say Route driving. 66. Oh, nice.
And it's been restored. They got money to do it.
Vintage when, sign?
Vintage sign.
Oh, that's
everything
what I love.
It's beautiful. And as far as I know, it is still there. When we did it, we saw the theater when we were there driving through in 2009, but stopped and took a picture of the sign. It's on my Facebook page.
That's very cool.
So you need to go there.
Absolutely. That's going to be a road trip. I know. We'll talk about Route 66 this year. Now, Sunday, Dave, is Betty White's 99th birthday. 99.
Are we counting down to 100?
Oh, I think we're going to have a 100 birthday celebration.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. The Guinness Book of World Records, she holds the record for the longest female TV entertainer at nearly 8 decades in the business. Now, I think you know this, but Betty was my first interview in 2012
right.
when I did my very first show here. And we were on the board of the Museum of Broadcast Communications together. I was her escort, and I use that term loosely, at a couple museum events here in Chicago. Like I'd pick her up at 8 in the morning and tour around the city, get her to her events, and we bonded. She was just terrific. And I called her before the interview, and I said, would you be my very first guest? And she told me yes.
Would you be my date for prom?
Yeah, that'd be great. Wouldn't that be great? No, I said, would you be my very first guest? And she said, well, it's been a long time since I've been somebody's first. But yes, I will do it.
I can hear
it.
Her saying
yes,
that.
Right. So I'm going to share a little bit, but it's fun because we're talking about Betty's past and her history and just some of the things she loves doing in her life. Here's a little bit from my 2012 conversation with Betty White.
Mary, dear, I heard you were in charge of the entertainment portion of the Teddy Awards show this year.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could have helped you out. I used to do a wonderfully artistic dance at private parties, but unfortunately, I don't have my costume anymore.
Oh?
Her snake died.
He died happy.
Nils Wielander attempted to harass me repeatedly. What do you mean he attempted to? He worked at Lars Eriksson's drugstore and tackle shop. He was a soda jerk. Now that I think about it, he was a town jerk. Every Saturday afternoon, I go in and have a sundae. Well, Nils would arrange the ice cream scoops in an obscene way. I could never prove it because by the time I would take it home to show my father... Melted.
Thank you for being a friend.
Hey, how are you, Dick?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
Just great. Thank you.
You know, I have to start out by saying your incredible career has spanned over 7 decades. Television, radio, the movies, you're an author. You know, what is left? What haven't you done?
Well, my answer to that has always been Robert Redford. But I still haven't.
You know, I think there's still time. I think there's still time for that.
I don't think he would find me that appealing.
Oh,
at 90, you know.
Oh, you know, America loves you. I can't imagine that Robert would feel any different. You know, I'm going to start with something that I don't believe too many people know about and have heard before. Your first role was in a play called Land of the Rising Sun.
Yes, it was in grammar school. And I wrote the play. We were studying Japan, and I wrote the play. And, of course, as any, you know, self-respecting playwright would do, I wrote myself into the lead.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And that was the launch. That was it. That's what started it all.
Well, I had always wanted to be a writer before that. But once I got on stage and once I checked out that audience, that changed my whole perspective. I thought, oh, this is fun.
That's great. And you know what? Usually, you know, Betty, when you talk about somebody that's got a lifelong career in all these different mediums, you know, you always say, well, they started in radio. But really, back in 1939, you actually first appeared on television.
Yes, it was an experimental thing. I was in high school, and they had a thing downtown, an experimental demonstration of television on the top floor of an automobile dealer.
Wow.
So we did The Merry Widow, the leading man in the graduation play, and I did The Merry Widow on the fifth floor of the Packard showroom. And the audience, there was one small television set down on the main floor among all the cars.
That you probably had to scrouch down to look into, right?
Yeah, well, my parents and the parents of Harry Bennett, who was the student body president that I played opposite, had to go down there and stand among the cars and watch this little 10-inch screen.
That's awesome. I love that. And then you actually, in the 40s, you did some radio, and then you broke into television again, and you did a morning show, which, you know, Hollywood on Television, which I have to imagine prepared you for anything.
Well, we were on 5.5 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Whoa.
For 4 years, with no script, no nothing, whatever happened, and... But it was like going to television college, really.
I bet.
It was a wonderful experience.
And then, you know, being you were the co-creator, the producer and star of the sitcom Life with Elizabeth, another pioneering moment for a woman in television, which is incredible.
But we didn't know any better then. We you know, it was years later that the women's movement came through, so everybody said, well, weren't you amazed at being a woman producer? And said, we never thought gender. We just, if the job was there to be done, we did.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. And I think that was your first Emmy nomination as well, was back then in 1951.
Yep.
Amazing. And then you did a daily talk show. You did another sitcom, Date with Angels. And then we really got to know you in the 1960s with being the queen of game shows on Password.
Oh, it was such fun. I wasn't the queen of game shows, but I loved game shows.
And that's where you met your beloved husband.
Yep, on Password.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, what would he say to all your success now after all these years of 90 years, 70 years of show business? What would he say to that right now?
Can you believe it? At age 90, I'm still not only working, but working steadily in a successful show. Who would have dreamed that could happen?
And you're still getting tons of offers. Well,
for
roles. Of.
I know it. And I'm the luckiest old broad on 2 feet, believe me.
But then you broke out. I mean, you know, people know you best, of course, as Sue Ann Nivens on the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Rose Nyland on the Golden Girls. And for both these shows, you know, very similarly to Hot in Cleveland, you know, one show you were only going to make one single guest appearance, and the other one you were almost cast as another character.
Yes, on Golden Girls, they called me in to play Blanche, and that was Rue McClanahan. And Jay Sandrich had directed most of the Mary Tyler Moore shows, and Jay directed our pilot of the Golden Girls. And it was Jay's wisdom that said, if Betty plays this man-hungry Blanche, the neighborhood nymphomaniac, after doing, you know, the same part.
Sure, Sue Ann.
Sue Ann on Mary, they're going to think she's doing the same gig. So it was his bright idea to have me play Rose, and I'm eternally grateful. In fact, we had dinner last week, and we're still very, Jay and his wife and I are still very, very close. And so we were laughing about it all these years later. We were saying, if he had let me play Blanche, my career could have ended right there.
Well, it gave you probably some new challenges, too, new opportunities for a different type of role. So that must have been exciting, too.
Absolutely, and it made me stretch a little, you know.
Sure. And, you know what's funny about going back to the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you know, you were only going to be on one or two episodes. It wasn't really going to be a long-term thing. And that's really what happened to you with Hot in Cleveland playing Elka.
Oh, I had it in my contract. I agreed to do the pilot, providing I would not be obligated if the pilot got picked up. Well, first of all, you do a lot of pilots that never see the light of day.
Sure.
And then, secondly, I just didn't have time. I wasn't being snobby. I just didn't. The schedule was too full, so I thought I didn't want to find myself contracting to do something that there's no time for.
Sure. What changed your mind? What made a difference?
Well, you do so many pilots that don't get picked up. We were picked up in 3 weeks. Sometimes you'll do a pilot and you don't find out till months later whether they're going to do it or not. We got picked up in 3 weeks, and by that time, I had done the pilot with Valerie Bertinelli and Wendy Malick and Jane Leaves, and we all just fell in love with each other to the point of having such a good time that when it came around to getting picked up and they came to me and asked if I would do some more, I said, but that wasn't the arrangement. Well, I have the backbone of a jellyfish, and they kept saying, well, what if you only work this? What if you only do this? So, I said, well, I'd do a couple more. I've done every one of them.
Well, you seem like you're having a great time doing it.
I am having the time of my life. You couldn't ask for a happier set.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
All right, something more important in 1929, the birth of legendary civil rights activist Martin Luther King Jr. He, of course, had a dream. Now, I spoke to Jesse Jackson about his legacy.
Yeah, you know, the mention of Dr. King does not come to thought. Dr. King finished high school at 15. He finished college at 19. He finished seminary at 22 and got his PhD at 26. An utterly brilliant man whose courage corresponded with his brilliance. But he also had a worldview. He had a worldview of reconciliation and not retribution. He saw nonviolence as a way of life as well as a tactic. And he believed that people put their bodies on the line to use and choose to learn to live together, not simply die apart. We could become a better people. And so that kind of philosophy was very appealing to me then and now.
The week before he was killed, you noted that polls at that time had indicated that 72% of whites were against him, but 55% of the black community had a negative view of him. How was that possible?
It was painful because many blacks who finally had public accommodation, the right to vote, waiting for the next level, they felt that our fight at the end of one Vietnam was a diversion from our struggle. He was attacked by black leadership, and when the pulpits were closed to him, he said, I cannot bifurcate my sense of justice. I'm a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Money is that should go for war and poverty at home and healing. We went for the war on Vietnam and killing. We killed 3 million people in Vietnam. 3 million people. Mm-hmm. And he said bombs dropped in Vietnam will explode in our cities because of neglect and riots. He was right. And ultimately, we killed all those people, and now finally, Vietnam is won again. And just as Vietnam is won again, and the walls have come down in Germany, the walls must come down in Korea, and they must come down in the Middle East. We must choose ultimately, no matter how difficult it is, bridges over walls and learn to coexist, not co-annihilate.
The day he passed away, the day he was killed 50 years ago, what do you remember about the details of that day? You were with Dr. Jackson, or excuse me, you were with Dr. King.
Oh, boy. He had come to Memphis, and they held the plane up because he had been threatened. They thought there was maybe a bomb on the plane, but the plane finally came in. The picture of Dr. King and Hosea Williams and Abernathy and I walking on the balcony the day before he was killed.
And that was Jesse Jackson on the legendary Martin Luther King. 1930 was the first radio broadcast of the Lone Ranger, WXYZ in Detroit, which was an affiliate of
Mutual affiliate. Mutual broadcast.
So it aired here on WGN Radio. Yep. But you watched the TV series, too, back in the day, right?
Yeah, I did. And there were some showings of it on Family Classics. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
My dad listened to Lone Ranger on WXYZ in Detroit when he grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
So he knew
the show.
Legendary. Absolutely. Yeah. 1955, Scrabble debuted on the board game market. Now, that, of course, is... your classic game that everybody... There's some really fancy versions of that out there now.
I haven't played Scrabble.
Wall versions with magnets that you kind of play on
there
the way out of the house.
There must be an online version.
There must be.
Where you move the mouse, the letters around on the computer screen.
I think you're
not
right.
Not on a physical board in front of you, but on a computer screen.
I think you're right.
Just like everything else.
That's right. Oh, my son and I, we're playing tic-tac-toe on my phone all the time, you know? I mean,
there
that's
you go.
The way to go.
Sure.
But we do play a board game. I mean, we do, and you know this, I have a collection of board games.
Yes, you do.
And we do randomly pick one once in a while and sit in the living room and play the board game for
good.
An hour.
That's great.
We're good for an hour.
That's great.
Good
you
for
know
an
what
hour.
We did family-wise with board games?
What's
the
that?
Big one was Life.
Oh, yeah.
We
with the little spun.
The wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Had that up in our little summer cottage in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Loved that game, too. Mm-hmm. 1965, the home of the Whopper was trademark registered. Here's a classic Burger King commercial.
We can serve your roast beef Whopper fresh with everything on topper. Any way you think is proper, have it your way.
Now, that's the way to do things. Our way.
Have it your way. Have it your way.
1972, Emergency with Robert Fuller premiered on NBC. 1975, Barney Miller premiered on ABC TV. Barney Miller.
Love Barney Miller.
A classic on Channel 9 for decades.
Wow.
1977, Ernie Banks was elected to the Hall of Fame. How historic was that?
Very.
Right?
Especially when you, a person like myself grew up, he was our hero.
I was 10 when he got elected into the Hall of Fame, and I thought, how amazing is this? Because he was a Chicago Cubby.
Of course.
It wasn't white. It wasn't black. He was ours.
He was ours. Yeah. And when we made it to the Baseball Hall of Fame, they were going to close in 10 minutes. But there was a very nice lady at the entry area that she said, who do you want to see? And I said, I just want to see Ernie Banks's plaque in the hall.
And you took a picture of it. I know it's online.
A picture of it, yeah. We went back the next morning and went through the whole thing.
Yeah. But I mean, talk about if you've never made that road trip, it is spectacular.
It is.
Right?
It is.
1978, Bee Gees' Saturday Night Fever album goes number one for 24 weeks.
My girlfriend at the time.
I see you dancing right now.
Danced. She lived for that album.
It was a classic.
Yeah.
It was a classic, a height of the disco era. 1981, Ronald Reagan was inaugurated as the 40th U.S. president. Here, you know, he always told some great stories, right?
Oh, yeah.
In his day. Here's one of them.
There was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a little bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning. And when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped and he said, wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before. So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer. So he got up on the mound, and when they came back, he gave his speech. And at the end of it, the farmer said, that's the first time I ever heard a Republican speech. And the candidate said, that's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform.
Dave, we will look forward to hearing you on Sunday morning.
Dave, always great to be in.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy. All right, top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are coming up next on 720 WGN.